Hello and welcome to The Dirt, NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We are thrilled to bring you weekly podcasts covering a wide variety of topics from industry leaders. You can listen to all our past episodes through Apple iTunes or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We are glad you are joining us today. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Dirt, NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We have a great wrap up to the 2021 year. We're going to talk a little bit of hitting, and we're also going to talk a little bit of coaching wellness. And I'm really pleased to have Craig Snyder with us from Texas A&M. Coach, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Joanna. When you asked me to do this, I was really excited. I always love the podcast and love listening to you guys and listen to different coaches. So I'm very honored and humbled that you want to bring me on and do this.
You bet. Well, this should be a little bit of fun. It's kind of a grab bag of sorts. And I really started thinking about this at convention. And we've got so many fun topics and content that's going on. I was talking to my mentorship triangle yesterday on a call. And one of the questions they brought up was, you know, how do I know what to implement right away? And what can I not implement right away? And I thought that was huge because there are so many things that we learn anytime we're immersed in education. So for you, how do you start the preseason hitting? And are there things that you introduce right away, or are there things that you need to get back on track with your kids when you haven't seen them in a while?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. You know, I think it's great when you go to the conventions and, you know, you learn from a lot of great people. You hear things differently. You hear things said differently. You see a drill that you may like and stuff. And there's no black and white to it when you implement that, right? I mean, because we all come back with more knowledge. We come back with these ideas. And, you know, I think sometimes what the worst thing you can do is word vomit onto your kids and go, blah, here's all the things. Let's do the things. You have to figure out what fits into your system, you know, and there's going to be some things you're going to write down that you go, you know what? I probably don't need to do that right now, but next fall, that's a fantastic idea. We can start that process. You know, there's going to be other things too, that like just maybe it's something said differently. You know, like you think about this when it comes to a swing or how I'm sitting a pitch or whatnot, and the words that that coach used, you can implement that straight away. And so it's a great question. There's no right or wrong answer. But I think it's important for coaches. I mean, once you go to convention, you learn a ton, you meet a lot of people, and, you know, being able to take that information and apply it at the right time is everything.
I think one of the great things you're talking about too is your system and understanding your system, because you don't want to take a new drill that you learned from, you know, Craig Snyder and throw it at your kids just for the sake of drilling. So when you get a new drill, when you see something, how do you work that backwards in your mind to know what skill is being taught with the drill? And how do you approach that as a, this is why we're doing the drill, when you explain it to kids to make sure it is fitting in what you've been doing the past 6 months, 8 months?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to, especially for drills, for me, that's more of an individual basis. And I always kind of try to have some bullets in the gun, right? So when our kids fail, not if, but when, you know, when that slump happens, when we're not feeling great, whatnot, like I like to have something in my back pocket going, hey, I think this could help you, and here's how. And so, you know, there's very few drills that we do that's unanimous for our program, because everybody swings a little bit different. Everybody's approach is a little bit different. Everybody moves a little bit differently. And so we try not to be as cookie cutter, you know, as possible. So I think taking those drills and understanding them, but then going, all right, when an athlete's, you know, 0-15 in the last couple months, you know, or at last couple games, you bring them in and go, hey, I've got an idea for you, and here's how we're going to do this. I want you to try this out. I want you to try to move this way. I want you to think about this. And so so that's kind of how I approach it. And I think it's important. I think it's important that we always have, as a hitting coach, you have some things set aside for each kid going, if things go south, I think this is something we can fix, or this is something we can do. But I think all too often, though, Joanna, I think people will try to fix before there's a problem, you know, like there's like, oh, that this swing's off, we got to do this. Kid's hitting 400. Who cares? let's let her go. Let her do the thing, you know, let her continue to compete. Let her continue to get better. Let her continue to ride that wave, because we all know it's hitting. It's a law of averages, and it's going to go up. It's going to go down. The more I can stay consistent, the better I'm going to be. So that's for me with the drills. When I take it away from convention, is like, I'm just going to have this for, ooh, that drill could work for this person. Or that drill could work for this player. Ooh, that would work really well for her. And there's going to be some too that I go, you know what? We've been working on this the whole fall, and I love the way she said that in that presentation. I'm going to send that to her right now. Hey, I want you to work on this. Then when we get back, we get to get after it.
You know, when you talk about that, when they fail, not if they fail, I immediately think of freshmen, because you have a freshman that comes to campus and they've clearly been the best on their game at some level for a decent amount of time. You know, they didn't get there by chance. And so usually, you know, freshmen, they tend to go two ways, right? But the freshmen that start off really well, when they struggle partway through, it can be extremely difficult. Are there things that, you know, you're watching for to try to know when to start the conversation with a first year player? Maybe it's a transfer that's playing at a new level. Maybe, you know, it's a high school freshman who, you know, just is being above her level in some ways and starts to struggle a little bit. What are some of the things that you look for, whether it's body language and not just outcome, to start the conversations of resiliency?
You know, it's a great question. And I think it's something I think we've done really well with our athletes, and even at Florida State, what we did is, you know, these freshmen come in like, listen, I've watched you in travel ball. I've watched you in high school, but I don't have enough information to know if you will or will not fail or you know, be successful at this level. So go get them. Now, what I'd like for our fall to look like is I'm going to challenge them. I'm going to put them in situations that's challenging. Can we get them better? Like, we're going to face machines and they're hard. You know, I mean, I think every freshman's come through our program probably since 2018, like, has faced machines in the first couple of weeks. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't hit, you know, because learning how to fail and learning how to process failure is everything if you want to be a great hitter. Because, you know, we could get in there and hit some front toss and hit off a tee and everything's hunky-dory. And, you know, we don't learn anything about, you know, the failure part. But then when we get into, you know, the season and you're in a conference where you're facing, you know, 68 plus every day, you're going to fail. So how do you manage that failure? How do you continue to stay in the fight? And I think that's the stuff that has to be done in the fall. I always worry about my freshmen. If they have a really good fall, I get nervous. I'm like, oh, I don't know. It seemed a little too easy for them. But maybe that's great. But I kind of wait for that moment that you know, I always heard, I don't know if I'm probably going to get this adage wrong, but this saying is like, you know, when the student appears, the teacher arrives. And like, all too often as coaches, we want to fix, and we're just trying to do, you know, fix swings and fix and get this right, get to this doesn't look right. We don't know yet. I don't know about a freshman yet. You may be able to get away with what you're doing. I'm going to have some ideas when she does fail. And, you know, I recall I really learned this a lot in the fall of 2017. You know, we had talked as a staff because, you know, we tended to get to postseason and we didn't hit well. And obviously you're facing the best pitching, right? So, but like, when I say that, the quality of plate appearances went down, the compete wasn't there. It was just like, it was overwhelming sometimes. So we sold out that fall after the 17 season, and we sold out to facing machines over and over again and putting them in adversity situations, putting in things that were hard, having conversations about that. And at the end of the fall, I thought I completely screwed it up because our kids were struggling. They couldn't hit. I remember our last fall game, we got beat by junior college 1-0, got completely shut out. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, oh gosh, what have we done? And, you know, I was nervous. I really was, you know, because I do think as a hitting coach, you're either giving confidence or taking it away in the cages. Both are good. Because sometimes it needs to be tough. And sometimes they need to be pumped up. But I don't think you ever stay stagnant. You're either giving or taking it away. And when the end of that 17th season, I went, oh my gosh, this might have been too much. the 18 season happens, and that's the year we won a national championship. And everything that we worked on in the fall showed up in postseason. So it was a constant reminder to me that it's okay for it to be hard, and it's okay for it to be challenging. And then when it is challenging and they do fail, how do we work through that failure? Because that's the season. I mean, that's hitting. It's hard. I mean, this thing is hard. And the moment we think it's easy, you know, we're wrong. It's going to hit us right in the mouth. So I like to set up, situations in the cages, like to set up games. Like, I want to play good fall games with good pitching. And, you know, I want our freshmen to get most of the at-bats. I want our freshmen to hit the top of the lineup and struggle a little bit, because I know that if we can get them to that point to where they're struggling just a little bit, then we can really teach. And so, and because we have to realize too, like, they're used to hitting 500 and 600. And, you know, I talk about that when I'm like, hey, what's your expectations of the fall? Oh, I think we hit 400, 500. I'm like, oh, sounds good. I'm sure you'll be great. And so, and then when they get to that point, then we can talk about what this looks like and really have a clear understanding of expectations versus reality.
A message from our official sponsor, Netting Professionals, improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, dugout benches, and more. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or visit nettingpros.com. Follow at Netting Pros on social media for their latest projects. Now, back to the podcast.
How much, Craig, do your upperclassmen help in that take confidence and give confidence? I love that. I'm definitely going to use that because they've lived it, right? And you know, there's always things that you say as a coach and it looks like the kid has no idea. And then either another coach or a student athlete says it and the kid gets the light bulb moment. And you're just sitting there thinking, hey, man, I don't care how you get it, but whatever. How much do you have your upperclassmen help those newcomers get through some of those moments?
A lot. Honestly, a lot. And I think that's the development of the culture and the program offensively. When you have players that have been through the weeds with you, that had the light bulb moment, they now want to share that. And so luckily for us, I've got some players now, upperclassmen, that are taking the young ones under their wing and go, hey, let's go hit. Hey, let's go work on the machines. Hey, let me help you with this. And it's when we get to that point, when they're self-teaching and self-coaching, then I think it's going to be special. Because at the end of the day, it's their at bats, right? Like, they're the ones that are in, this is their careers. It's their at bats. They're the ones that are competing in the box, not me. And so I hope that we create a culture that they work on their own, that they self-correct, that they work on different stuff. And if they have questions, hey, coach, think about doing this extra. Yeah, absolutely. Go for it. You know, that's a great idea. And so, and then sometimes I'll kind of, you know, soak the fire a little bit and go, hey, bring so-and-so in to hit with you a little bit early today. I think she could use some advice. You know, she was very similar to you when you were a freshman. So you kind of soak the fire as a coach too. But, you know, I think when you can have those upperclassmen, and the ones that have been through the weeds and the ones that have found success after they've gone through the weeds, it makes a big difference, makes a huge difference.
You know, going back to that 2017, 2018, the 2-year span, I remember the 2017 Florida State team thinking, this is it. This is the team. You know, this is the one. And I think we see that a lot for whatever reason, you know, it didn't work out. And then you don't expect it with the 2018 team. And then, you know, bam, every time they just keep hitting you in the mouth. I mean, they were so much fun to watch. And, you know, I'm sure a proud moment as a coach. But do you think there's some of that, you know, 2017 adversity that really, I don't want to say takes the pressure off, because I don't think that's right. But where the expectations are just different, that it lets kids thrive a little bit more? Or do you think it's deeper than that? Do you think it's more of that learning from and then continuing to be able to persevere from, because it's an experience that they didn't have, you know, 360 days before that?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I don't know that there's one right answer for that, but I do know, you know, that that 17 team and to date was probably still the most talented team I think we had coached. They did everything right. they showed up and they did extra. They did everything that they were ever asked and above some, and it didn't work out. You know, I do think there was a little bit of this. We lost the ability to enjoy the moment. And I think that was really important. That what we took away from that is, you know, winning the ACC, we're like, eh, okay. Or you win a series, oh, okay. Like, we didn't embrace the success. It was like, oh, okay, but that's great. But we're shooting for this. So, it's great to have goals, and it's great to have, you know, what you're chasing. But when we never process the moment, when we never process the success, you're setting yourselves up for failure. And that was what we did. You know, we didn't make it out of that super, you know, we were the number one ranked team in the nation, all the things. Right. And this conversation was, this is the team. Well, how dare we say that? We've never even played in the national championship game. So who are we to say that we're going to go win a national championship? That's hard. That's a little stretch, you know? And that's the one thing we talked a lot about with that team that wanted is, let's embrace these moments. Let's embrace a series win. Because you know what? It's hard. And for us to think that it wasn't, that was a little arrogant, and that was a little much. And I think we all learned that as a staff and as players. And so that 18 team embraced the moments. They embraced the successes. And so, you know, I think that was a big, big thing for us in that year. And I think, too, there was a chip on our shoulder at that point. None of those kids wanted to feel what they felt in that locker room in 17. I can tell you, I've never seen a team that devastated. Not once in my career. It was 21 years. I've never seen a team that devastated. And those returners came back and said, no, we're not doing that again. So there was some determination as well. So us implementing the tough falls and the hack attacks and stuff, it was more welcomed with open arms because they didn't want that feeling again.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of the things that you learn along the way as a coach, really it changes your approach to a lot of different things. And, you know, you mentioned the hack attack. I think that's one change that we've seen in our sport. When you think about what a pitching machine used to be used for, and then, you know, you go away from it and then you come back to it. And I think there's been, you know, really a much more widespread embracing of movement. Right. If mm-hmm. you want to train, you have to hit something that moves, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think the biggest way you've changed as a hitting coach has been when you think about, you know, not even the 21 years, but the last five or the last seven or, you know, hey, the last two? What are some things that, you know, you feel are different with you in the way you approach the game?
I think when I was a younger coach, I could tell you what a swing's supposed to look like. I studied it. It's mechanics this, mechanics that. And everything was a mechanical fix, you know. Oh, you hit this ball wrong. Hey, you should try this, do this, flip this, you know, turn this. And as I've gotten older through this, you know, it's been more about approach. You know, I like to reverse engineer a lot of things. To me, the body's going to work how it's supposed to if you think properly, if you have a plan, if you execute that plan, if you can talk through at bats and self-talk yourself through that. You know, so we're going to face, say, 70 spinning up. How are you hitting that? Well, I got to do this. Or it's like, oh, hey, I'll never forget when we faced, you know, Rachel Garcia in the World Series. It's like, hey, let's try to make our outs on the ground. Did I want our kids to hit a ground ball? No, absolutely not. But what happened is that they leveled their swings out and you left the yard a few more times. And so I like to reverse engineer a lot of things. So we talk about things in terms of upspin, downspin, and off speed. We don't talk about curves and screws. No, it's either got upspin or downspin, and it's off speed. So how do we hit that? Downspin, we're going to try to get underneath it. We're going to try to elevate that ball. Upspin, we're going to look above it. We're going to try to stay through this thing. You know, off speed, we're going to start a little bit later. We're going to look for this pitch, or, you know, we're going to try to find picks on that. And so I think through that, like even at Texas A&M, you know, we've come the first year prior. I mean, you know, not a lot of damage and stuff. And then, you know, at last year being our first for the full year, we doubled most of those numbers. And it wasn't about the mechanics of it. You know, it was about just the approach, just the thought process of it. And so I that was really neat to see it again, to do exactly what we're doing for Satan, and seeing it happen now at Texas A&M. And I think we're taking it even farther now, as you know, if I studied a lot of the great offensive teams in our game, you know, they move a certain way. They time a certain way. And I've been watching that a lot. And so we spent a lot of time this fall actually diving into, you know, pre-pitch movement, which is hitting. I mean, really, that's the thing we should all be worrying about more than anything. It's how we move prior to launch is everything. And so we've added that, and it was a good fall. We saw some great things. We saw some kids that have really developed. And so that gets me excited. And you know, I continue to evolve. I mean, yes, 21 years, yes, found success, but I'm still learning. Gosh, like if you told me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago that I would have to know more about how, you know, biometrics and anatomy and all that. I've learned more about science and anatomy than I think I ever did in college. Of course, I think I slept through those classes, but that's not important. But, you know, I think I've continued to learn, and, you know, looking at the TPI stuff and on base view and just learning how the body moves and just listening and trying to figure that part out. It's everything. And so, like, now I think as a hitting coach, we have to wear so many hats. Like, not only are you now a professor in biomechanics, but you also need to understand metrics, and you need to understand what these numbers mean. And it's like, I'm a math whiz now too. I'm going, gosh, this is whatever happened to see ball, hit ball. That's not a thing anymore. There's too much information. So, I continue to evolve, and I think as a coach, like, the day that I stop evolving as a hitting coach is the day that I need to walk away, because I think I've got it figured out, and I don't have it figured out, you know? And so I think that's been a big part of it. And I just think too, Joanna, the relationships you have with your players, like understanding how to manage their emotions and manage them as a person, that's everything. And so we spend a lot of time with that with our kids too, because in the heat of the battle, like, what I say to them is everything. Hey, what are you looking for out here? Or maybe I'm a little more stern with one player, and, you know, a little bit, hey, a little softer with another one, but trying to get them to be the best version of them in those moments of battle. That's the stuff you have to learn.
You know, I think that sometimes that biomechanic piece is really scary, especially for our youth coaches, our grassroots coaches. Were you a little nervous about that, you know, in changing the way you approached the swing, or was it something you just thought, well, heck yeah, something different. Let's dive in.
Oh yeah, completely nervous. I was like, wait a second. And I'd reached out to coaches, and I mean, they're throwing words out. I'm like, what is a posterior chain? What is this thing? And so I was nervous, but I read a lot, and I talked to people a lot, studied a lot, and just continue to learn. And I'm no expert on it by any means. And I don't claim to be, I'm super knowledgeable in it. I'm learning. I'm continuing to learn, because I think, you know, when we can learn how the body moves, then we can learn what things we can and can't do with a player. You know, if they don't have the scap strength, like moving their hands up, probably not the best idea just because of how they move, you know, and that's just things we're starting to learn now. But I also think this, you know, we're going to learn all these things. We're going to do this, but at the end of the day, like, if we don't have a plan, and if we're not actively looking for something to hit, or we think and trying to hit in, out, upspin, whatever that is, it doesn't matter. And I think that's what numbers don't show, is the thought process. So if I can get our athletes to think at a high level and process how they're going to do that, and, oh, by the way, I can get them to move a little bit better, now I think we're doing things. And so I think we've had the approach and the thought process with our hitters at A&M. They've gotten so much better at that. And now if I can get them to move better, now I think we start to really see some cool stuff.
I love the candor that you bring to the profession, and you always have, Craig. And I think one thing that has been really cool, you know, you're the newly elected vice president of the NFCA for education, and I'm thrilled to be able to work with you and continue working together in a lot of ways. But, you know, that same level of candor at convention, you started talking about mental health for coaches. And you know, I think that's something that we've started to dive into a little bit as a profession. And, you know, we've done some webinars and we've done some other things, but as we continue to unravel the stigma around our student athletes, as we continue to help our student athletes understand it's okay to not be okay, to talk about how they're feeling. We haven't, I don't think, my personal opinion, been able to do that with coaches at the same rate. We haven't been able for a coach to say, look, I need the week. I need the week. And if it means I'm not recruiting, it means I'm not recruiting. There's just this constant push, push, push from a coach perspective. And I think this is a great passion area and something that you have spoken about a few times, but what is it for you that connects you to this topic of balance and harmony and the profession and as a coach, what we need to do to make sure we are at our best, for our student athletes?
Yeah. I think COVID really opened our eyes a lot for coaches. And I think any coach out there listening, they struggled. They struggled because, our lives were based on everybody else, right? Like, we serve, that's what we do. We fill the cups of our kids, and when COVID happened, all of a sudden we're home all the time. We're not out recruiting. We're trying to be with our athletes, via Zooms, all the things, but what a challenge. What a complete challenge. And, I got to thinking about it. I think as coaches, we're there for our athletes. Any coach out there knows, we hear conversations. We have conversations that kids are struggling, and kids struggle more these days than they ever have. And I think anytime that you have conversations like that, where you're trying to help an athlete try to figure some stuff out, it takes a little bit out of you. And so, my thought was I look at what we've done with the NFCA and what it's grown into. Now we have lawyers now for our coaches. When they're going through, if they're getting an investigation or they just need some legal advice, hey, guess what? We have that now. Here's our lawyer, and she's going to give you great advice. What happens to the coach that just needs somebody to talk to, who do they reach out to? Because I think so many times in our profession, we'll call our friends, right? We'll call our, close friends, man, struggling with this. Gosh, how do I do this? And they're our friends, and they're our coaching friends. Hey, I understand, I'm there for you. But, some of those conversations, none of us are equipped to deal with, and I think there needs to be some professionals that are available to go, hey, this would be a great person for you to reach out to, because it's okay that you're not okay. Because guess what? This profession is hard. It is hard. And it's okay that you're struggling with this. When I mentioned to the board, I talked to so many coaches this fall out recruiting that were just really struggling with life stuff. And it got me thinking, how can we better serve them, through the NFCA and as coaches, to really bring to the forefront, hey, listen, here's some resources. I really think you guys should look into this, because you can't fill the cup of others until you fill yours. You can't take care of other people until you fill yours, until you take care of yourself, And I think that's a big one. I think it's a really big one. And so we can't give our athletes what they need or what they deserve if we're not giving ourselves that, if you're not taking breaks, if you're not shutting it down, if you're not actively working on some stuff in your life. I'm a big proponent of that, because I do think that stuff's kind of helped me, in my profession to help athletes, more so now. I think, especially hitting coaches, we're more counseling than we are hitting coaches sometimes. It's like, you're the person in the cages, here comes the tears, and what do you say? What do you say to them? How do you help them through a tough time, And a lot of times, as we know too, as coaches, that if they're struggling on the field, it's usually paralleled off the field. We're dealing with, family issues. We're dealing with boyfriend, girlfriend issues. We're dealing with school issues. There's always something usually it parallels to. And so, I don't know. I think this topic is something that I would really like to see us as an organization now really dive into our coaches and go, hey, here's some resources. Here's how we'd like to help you. Because I think it would be really impactful for our profession to do something like that.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to dive in a little bit more to what this looks like. And for anybody who's listening, who connects with this and this speaks to them, feel free to reach out and give us your thoughts and ideas and ways that you think coaches can really benefit and help us, you know, create some groundwork here for coaches to have the resources that they need and be able to do things at a high level. And, you know, Craig, for you, and this is pretty common knowledge, I think, for people that know you, but several years ago, you seemed to find a hobby, right? You're doing some really cool woodworking things, really cool things. What has that been like for you to have just a separate release? You know, you're a wonderful husband, a great father, a tremendous coach. I mean, you've got a lot of buckets that you're filling, right? So did you feel guilty starting a hobby? I mean, truly, I mean, that is a legitimate question. And how has it benefited you being able to just put a little bit of time in there when you feel like you need it?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And, you know, it's always been something I've always been passionate about growing up on a farm in Kentucky. So I had opportunities to, my grandfather was a woodworker, you know, by trade and a farmer. And, you know, I remember I'd spend countless hours with him at night, like just piddling around the wood shop, you know, and, you know, it was always something I wanted to get into. And, you know, I started probably about 5 or 6 years ago, just really starting to get into the live edge furniture and charcuterie boards and all the things. Right. And just learning something else and studying and learning. And it gave me such balance. And it was hard because, yeah, you're right. Like, you don't want to take away time from your family. You don't want to take away time from, you know, softball, it's whatnot, but like, balance is everything. Again, you have to take care of you before you can take care of everyone else. And I think it's important sometimes of it, because I think there's a lot of pressure, especially having kids in this profession. Like, you feel this pressure, like, I have to be home. And when I'm home, I have to be present, I have to do these things, you know, because I'm never home. And it's hard. It's really hard. And anybody out there listening that has kids, like, they get that. Like, we miss a lot of things, and it's tough. It's really tough. But again, when you come home drained, like, how are you actually giving to your family right now? How are you filling your kids' cups, you know? Or when you do, then how are you refilling your buckets at night? You know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes into that, and there's no right or wrong answer with it. I mean, everybody's got their thing. And so what I found was, for me, the woodworking was very relaxing, you know, and it's kind of this cool thing, right? You get into a different slab, and there's the different patterns and knots and all the things, and everything's just adjusting, because there's no, with live edge furniture, there's no right or wrong way, and until you really dive into that piece of wood, like, you don't know what it's going to bring. But then as you continue to work and you continue to do the things, it starts to really come to life. And, you know, I love that stuff. I really do. It's been a cool thing for me. And, you know, during COVID, I did a lot of it, almost to the point where I didn't enjoy it anymore, because then it became a job. Because I'm like, oh, I'll throw this out there, and people, hey, could you make me one? And then all of a sudden, it started to flip a little bit on me and go, oh, wait a second, this is not what I signed up for. This is my release. This isn't my job. And so I backed off a little bit this fall. But actually, starting today, I've got a few things I want to make and starting to build. And as I start to do those things, it's such a release to me. So I think having something like that in your life is so important for coaches. Like, what helps you recharge the engines, you know? Is it going and watching the sunrise? Is it sunset? Is it reading? Is it meditating? Is it talking to your friends? Like, what helps you fill your buckets? And everybody's different. And I think you have to have that. You have to have that. And you look at these veteran coaches that have been doing this a long time. I think of Coach Evans. He has such good work-life balance. And it's funny, we say balance. I don't think anything's ever balanced, right? Like, there's never a balance, because it's like a teeter-totter to me. There's going to be times where softball and coaching is going to need more than family. There's going to be times family needs more than that. So it's a constant, you know, give and take. I don't think we ever have, like, complete balance. But, you know, you look at the coaches that have done this a long time, they've stayed in this profession a long time, like, they've figured that part out. And that's why, too, I think it's so important for us to talk about some of these issues with our younger coaches, especially. It's like, hey, if you want to have a 25, 30-year career, like, these are things you need to be talking about now. Like, don't hit burnout in year 8. Like, learn how to do some of that stuff now. Learn how to have something outside of your profession that's going to be great for you. And so I think that's my big stitch. Because most of our veteran coaches, they figured it out. Whether they had to figure it out on their own or they had help along the way, you know, who knows? But I think we could do a really good job with our younger coaches in this profession, like, understanding the value of this.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because we've done so much work with the balance, and it is a horrible word that people, you know, seem to understand, and you can try to find all kinds of things, you know, whether it's the harmony or the equilibrium, but anything that's worth your time in life will screw up your balance. If it is worth your time, it's gonna mess with it and take portions of it. And so whether it's integration or, but that's misleading too, because there are some people who want things to be completely separate. You know, they want a bucket of work and a bucket of home, and that's okay, because there's no right or wrong way, you know, for you to be able to get what you need as a human. And I think that for us just to have the conversation and to start talking about, you know, here are things you need to think about. And your burnout piece is completely true. There's a great forum that we did. Go check that out on our NFCA forum page online with, you know, Dr. Baghurst from Florida State and Shawna Stanton and several other coaches of just, you know, hey, look, this is real. And we see it, and we see it in people of all ages and genders and races and walks of life. And it's not worth it when it's preventable and when you can do some of those things. So really excited to get into this a little bit more and really work on, you know, ourselves as people. And sometimes we lose that. You're so worried about the administration, so worried about your student athletes. A lot of times coaches are stuck in the middle, and there are some things that they need as well. Are there any things, Craig, that you think, and I think agree, Coach Evans is amazing at this, but things that you all do as a staff or things that you have, you know, when you look and, you know, Lonnie at Florida State was great at making that family environment as well when you were there, but is there anything that you've learned in those last several years that you would encourage other coaching staffs to do or things to do within the department when you're in the middle of the spring and it's just, you're in that grind for, you know, a few moments of a reprieve, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. What you know, I tell you, I think, I mean, I've been so fortunate in my career. I've been blessed to work with so many great head coaches, from Coach Evans to Coach Alameda to Coach Gabe McNaught and Mark Montgomery, Patty Gasol. I mean, the list goes on. Tom Optenbrough, of just wonderful people that I've been around. And what I found with the ones that have the best connection, the ones that are truly helping their staff, are the ones that check in. And it's not a, you know, hey, let's have a check-in, let's have a meeting, like, how are you doing? It's more of a, hey, what's on your mind today? You know, just a conversation. I can, like, when Coach Evans and I have these conversations, they're great. It's just a, hey, what's on your mind today? And I love that phrase, what's on your mind, because then it's just an open forum of things, and you start talking. Lonnie was the same way, you know, and we would talk about just the most random things. And so I think it's so important for head coaches out there, is to check in with your staff on an individual basis. Check in with them. See how they're doing. You know, because we know that the assistants are the ones that are definitely in the weeds of different stuff, and the head coaches get their things too. And as an assistant, I do the same thing. I'll ask the same questions. Hey, coach, how you doing today? What's on your mind today? You know, and just open that door to have the conversations. And so the most successful ones I've been around are the ones that definitely – check in on their staff that way, because especially I think the younger coaches, they're trying to figure stuff out, they're trying to learn, and I think that's great. And I think from the administration wise, you know, I know we're all digging into kids and mental health and stuff, but like I think there's so many more things administrationally we could do on an individual basis at schools to work with our staffs. You know, how are you doing this? What are you doing to help grow your staff in this area? You know, we always ask the questions in the interviews and stuff, and we, you know, all the interview questions, right? But like, hey, how do you manage your staff? How do you manage your staff's mental health? I think that's a great question to ask. Like, as an athletic director or something, like, if you ask that question, and you got a coach that can really do some stuff, like, you're gonna have a dynamic staff when we're managing those personalities as well. And that's something that, you know, Coach Evans and Coach Alameda did a phenomenal job, as they manage their people. And when you can do that, you're going to get the most out of your people. And I've learned that from those two. It's absolutely incredible. Incredible. And so I'd love to see the administration take more of a lead on that for your coaches, though. You know, I think it'd be great.
You know, I think the question about what's on your mind today is so important because you can't shrug it off. The how you doing? How's it going? That's good. Okay. A good or okay answer to what's on your mind today, it doesn't make any sense. You can't shrug that off. And so it's just that window. And maybe the first couple of times you ask it, they don't answer. You know, it's just like you've brought it up several times already, the kid in the cage. You know, the first couple of times you say, how are things going? I'm good. You know, how's your family? They're good. But the fifth time, the sixth time, the seventh time, you know, then it opens that window a little bit more and you can say, you know what, that's on my mind today. I don't feel like I'm doing enough for everybody else, you know? And then when you have someone that's as in tune as, you know, the people you've mentioned and, you know, as you would be to your student athletes, it can be a game changer. So I think even crafting the right question and using the right words and putting the phone down when you ask the question and all of those things, you know, are so crucial to the follow-up because it's not the question. It's that you got to be ready to listen to the answer as well.
That's right.
And invest in that follow up.
And you know, I think it's interesting because I do the same thing with our hitters, right? I'll ask the same, hey, what's on your mind today? Or hey, coach, can we hit today? Yeah. Hey, what's on your mind? And then here it comes, you know, and whether that's hitting your life or whatnot. But I think too, is I always say this as a good hitting coach or even a good coach in general. You're usually only asking the questions you know the answer to. You know, I get like a good lawyer almost. And sometimes you're just asking the question you know the answer to. So I know in hitting, I go, I'm asking some questions that I think I know the answer to, but we're just going to see where this takes us, you know. But yeah, the open-ended question, what's on your mind, Joanne? I think it's huge. I think it's huge. I learned that from a hitting coach in the minor leagues. He said that he talks that to his players and they come in, hey, what's on your mind today? And then boom, here it comes. And that's been really productive for us offensively and with our kids and just developing those relationships too. And so, but yeah, even with your staff, you can ask those questions. I think it's absolutely huge.
Well, Craig, you know, we've talked about a lot of things and we always use the last question of the podcast as kind of a piece of advice. So, you know, here are coaches listening, you know, it's a couple of days before the start of 2022. What advice would you give a coach on what they should do the right out of the gates for 2022 to set the tone to have maybe their best year yet?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about all the coaches. I can't speak for everybody. I mean, for me, I know that I want to be as present as possible for our athletes this year. Like that's something I've really thought about. Like I want to be just locked into the moment with them. You know, because I think so often we get ahead of ourselves as coaches. We think about, you know, the wins and losses and what this looks like for postseason. And those are things we have to think about, right? But when I can really enjoy the moment, when I can celebrate the successes of our hitters, when we can really just problem solve in that moment, I think that's everything. And, you know, and it sounds so cliche, right? Process. That's the fun buzzword. But when you truly live that and when you truly do that as a coach, the success starts to take care of itself. You know, so I think that's part of it. And I think invest in your kids. Like, you know, I think when you grow an individual, you'll get a great ball player out of them. Like if we're just chasing the success, if we're just chasing numbers, we're just chasing good softball players, I think we're missing the boat. But when we can grow that person as an individual, we're going to have a really good softball player because they're going to be confident. They're going to know themselves. They're going to, you know, they're going to operate a little bit differently. And so, and that way, again, when the failures come, it's not the end of the world because softball doesn't define them. They define them. Their life defines them. And so I think that's my advice is like really, you know, stay in your process and stay where your feet are, but also like invest in your kids, invest in growing them, growing them as people, grow them as people. And you're going to have a very successful softball program.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for taking the time to chat here at the end of the year and for your commitment to not only the student athletes in your institution and the sport, but coaches and the profession in general. You're just always a lot of fun to talk to, and, you know, really look forward to continuing to work with you on so many different levels over the next several years. And for anybody that's listening, if something resonates with you, I encourage you, track Craig down, talk to him, send him an email. He's always got time for everyone. One of my favorite things about you, Craig. Thank you so much. And it's been a real pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you again. Again, I was honored and humbled to be able to get on and talk about the hitting and stuff. And then also the stuff we're talking about, the mental health. I mean, again, I think if we can get the ball rolling on that and really help some coaches out. And, yeah, please email me. I am happy to answer questions anytime. And, you know, I love the sport, want to grow the sport. And I just, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So thanks for having me on, Joanne. I really appreciate it.
You bet. And we will be back at the start of 2022. We're going to talk goal setting and ways that you can implement a goal structure within your team. We've got Linda Garza from Nevada going to join us for that episode. And as we kick off the next year podcast, feel free to reach out, drop us your suggestions. We'd love to bring some topics to you that you are passionate about. Until next time, this has been Joanna Lane, Senior Director of Education for the NFCA and the Dirt NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals.
Thanks again for listening to The Dirt, NFCA podcast presented by Netting Professionals. We encourage you to let us know what topics you would like covered in future episodes. Join us again next week for another exciting podcast.